Dr. Arne Buss received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell University. He's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. He works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. And in the past 8 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communications to a wide variety of organizations in the Monterey area. He's also a distinguished Toastmaster. And in 2011, he was a semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship of Public Speaking. He joins us on the third Thursday of each month to share his segment, Speaking of Listening. Let's have this musical introduction followed by Dr. Arne Buss and Speaking of Listening.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find relief.
And welcome to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar. As Solazar said, I am your host for this segment, Arne Buss. Speaking of Listening is all about ways of improving your relationships of all kinds by listening from your heart. And today I'm going to talk a little bit more about what I mean by that. And I will be, I'm preparing another set of workshops. I haven't quite nailed down exactly what the dates are. The plan is for them to be a series of six evenings, probably on Thursdays, sometime in October. Again, I'm still working on the venue for that. But if you want more information, you can email me at ahbuss@consciousawareheart.com, or you can check out my webpage, which is www.consciousawareheart.com. That's Conscious Aware Heart is all one word. And listening is not just about hearing what the other person is saying. It's not about hearing just the words. It's not about being able to repeat back what was said. It's about really understanding the message that the other person is trying to convey. And many times, though, that message is a little unclear. Many times the person expressing it may not be completely aware of what it is they're trying to get across. And by being an effective listener, you can not only understand better what they're getting at, you can help them understand a little better what they're trying to express. And in the process, that relationship, whatever kind of relationship it is always deepens and becomes much more rich and juicy. Because when you find out what's really going on with the other person, then that's so insightful. That's what all relationships are about. We are all different. And if you and I share exactly the same thoughts, then there's no need for communication, because if you have my thoughts and my thoughts your thoughts, sounds like a Mr. Spock mind meld, then there's no need for communication, because I know what you think and you know what I think. It becomes interesting when we have different thoughts. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is that when we have different thoughts, then that can lead to conflict. We see conflict, you know, every day in the news. It just filled with a lot of negativity and people talking across each other. Regardless of which side of the political spectrum you may fall, I would suggest or guess that you're a bit dismayed by the lack of communication between people with different points of view. Now, today I'm going to delve a little bit more deeply into what I mean by conscious versus unconscious, and talk specifically about the two unconscious places that we communicate from, namely the child/victim or the parent/judge. And what I like about this is that really kind of breaks down the unconscious communication that we have into really one of two categories, almost like a continental divide, as it were. Remember, the continental divide is an invisible line where if a drop of water falls on one side, it goes to the Atlantic Ocean. If it falls on the other side, it goes to the Pacific Ocean. So the two unconscious places are the child and the parent. And for each one, I'm going to delve a little bit into their origins, talk about what the impact today is when we find ourselves caught up in one of these unconscious patterns, and how we can identify that which one may be active, the one that's going on right now, and how to deal with it in that moment when we notice that it is active. And over time, the objective, or at least my objective, and maybe some of yours, is to reduce the amount of time that we are in an unconscious state and increase the amount of time that we're in a conscious state. And the, as I said, the two unconscious places are the victim and the judge. And there's really only one conscious place, and that I call the aware heart. It goes by many, many different names depending on which spiritual or religious tradition you follow. But I've noticed that every spiritual tradition has some kind of notion of this, whether it's expressed explicitly or not. And I'm going to finish up by discussing how all of this applies to being an effective listener. Okay, so first, I'm going to talk about unconscious versus conscious. So let me first talk about what being conscious is. And to me, what summarizes it is the following statement: conscious is being fully present to the reality of what is happening in this moment. Conscious is being fully present to the reality of what is happening in this moment. So what do I mean by fully present? I mean that you're alert and you're aware of the present moment. And by awareness, I mean there are so many rich dimensions to this. There's physical presence. Okay, you know, are you feeling your body, or are you somehow out of your body? Are you aware of your breath? Every moment of life we're breathing, from the moment that we're born until the moment we pass, we are breathing. Are you aware of your breathing? There's a very good reason why many meditation traditions begin by saying, just notice your breath. Are you present mentally? Are you entirely conscious in your mind of what is happening right now? Or are you thinking about something that you have to do? Or are you regurgitating something in your mind that happened previously? Or are you completely here and now? Are you aware of your thoughts and feelings? You know, we always have thoughts. In the Buddhist tradition, they call it the monkey mind. It's always kind of chattering. And my understanding of it is it's not that that's a bad thing. It's just a thing. And we always have thoughts and feelings that are going on. So it's not that they're bad or wrong. It's just, you know, how do we react to them? Are you aware of your thoughts without judging them? Are you aware of your feelings without judging your feelings or thinking, well, I shouldn't feel this way? And what is reality? Now, the more that spiritual traditions are converging to the science of perception, because so much of our perception is what goes on in our brain. It's not even what our eyes see or our fingers feel or our ears hear. It's the way our brain processes that information. And there's some amazing work in neuroscience that shows that it isn't just these, our senses are not just these passive things that are bringing in the signals, but what's happening is our brain is filtering it all. Now, how is your brain filtering that? Is it taking your sensations and taking your perceptions and putting them through these judgments? Now, it turns out that we can, at least maybe for short periods of time initially, directly perceive reality by using inquiry, by being curious, by dropping our preconceived ideas. There's a spiritual teacher named A.H. Almas who over the past few decades has created something called the Diamond Heart approach, and he has some specific ways that can be done. Again, I don't particularly subscribe to that, but I found parts of it to be very useful, and there are some people I know who are deeply involved and find it to be a very valuable way of getting to this present moment and direct reality. And in fact, you may have, and you probably do have, if you're listening to this, some type of approach that helps you be in direct contact with reality as it's happening in this moment. And as I said, every spiritual tradition of which I'm aware has some type of addressing being in the present moment. You know, whether it's a formal one like Buddhism or somebody like Eckhart Tolle, who wrote a wonderful book called The Power of Now, all about being here and now. And in the present moment, in a state of consciousness, you find that there are no judgments and that you're not making anybody wrong. You're not making yourself wrong. You're not making the other person wrong. It's you're directly seeing that authentic self, that part of you that's your essence. And it can be very challenging. So the other day, I found myself washing dishes, and I was thinking about things I had to do. I was worried about what had happened during the day. I found myself wanting to just kind of hurry and get the dishes done with. And then I noticed that I was doing that. And so I made a conscious choice to just sort of stop and take a few deep breaths. And I slowed down. And when I did, I found that I became more aware of the sounds. I became more aware of the physical sensations, the feel of the water, the touch of the dishes and the pan, the sights, you know, what things we're looking at. And I was focusing on what I was doing, and the other thoughts and judgments and negative feelings that I had just seemed to dissipate. I wasn't trying to make them so, but I found that by just focusing on just a very simple task like that, I was able to be more at peace and be more aware of what was happening in that moment. I believe it's a Buddhist phrase, you know, chop wood, carry water. You know, basically, just kind of in the simple things, we can become more aware. Now, the other side is being unconscious. Now, being unconscious is not being fully present in this moment in one or more ways. So it's a lack of awareness. It's not being aware of your body. I mean, have you ever gone through and just kind of done the motions and not being really conscious of what your body is doing and the feel of your muscles and your bones and your sinews? And then there are your thoughts and your feelings. It was a real surprise to me when I started working on this with myself, that there was, I had thoughts and feelings I had no idea that I was having. And the thing is that if you're not aware of the thoughts and feelings, they're still there. And this is particularly true of of judgmental thoughts, which lead to negative feelings. So not being aware of what those thoughts are, chances are you'll be feeling a certain way, maybe feeling very bad or have negative feelings and have no idea why. Now, the thing is about feelings is that, you know, feelings are neither right nor wrong. I mean, if you feel something, then that's what you feel. So it's not that feelings are neither bad nor good. They just are, and we have them. We have them all the time. But what creates them is often our thoughts and judgments. And negative feelings are usually the result of having negative thoughts. Now, the thing about negative thoughts or negative feelings is that we can just get lost in them. And you can it's easy to see that in others. It's a little more challenging to see it in oneself. But with these thoughts or with these negative feelings are these sponsoring thoughts, like judging yourself, judging others. Just one example. This morning, I found myself driving to work, and I had no idea how I got there. I had no idea how I got into the car. I didn't have, you know, now somehow I had woken up, I had showered, I'd shaved, I'd brushed my teeth, I prepared my breakfast, I ate my breakfast, I scanned the news, I gathered my things, I went in the car, I unlocked the car, I started the car, and I was halfway to work before I realized what was happening. I was doing everything up to that point completely unconsciously. And I would assure you that this is not an example of early onset Alzheimer's, but that's the way so much of our time is spent, just being unconscious, just kind of going through the motions. And, you know, when there's something habitual, obviously I can do all of these things without really having to think about it too much. But during that time, which I will never get back, I have no presence from that. Now, how this arises many times. In fact, driving is a perfect example of that. I mean, how many times when you're driving do you react to the other driver? Somebody cuts you off, and before you even have time to think about it, oh, that son of a bitch, how can you show him? I mean, how much road rage is done by people just being having that unconscious reaction? Even, you know, somebody who may be totally peaceful and mild, when they get in the car, all of a sudden, just this unconsciousness kind of kicks in. Now, there are two kinds of unconscious selves, as I've mentioned, the child victim or the parent judge. And I want to talk about each one a little bit now. So the child victim self is all about making yourself wrong, being the victim. It has several different aspects, you know, one of which is self-blame and self-criticism. And if you were to hear the voice, it might be childish and maybe even a little whiny if you were to hear that inner voice in your head. What are the origins of this? The origins of the child victim, as far as I can tell, are these negative feelings propelled by old wounds, and often these come from childhood. And as little ones, we're often being made wrong. I mean, even the most loving parent at some point has to correct their child and just not let them run amok. And if your parent was less than fully wonderful in that regard, then it could be even worse. And so the origin of the child victim kind of comes basically replaying this old self. And as Solazar was saying earlier, when we live in the past, it affects the present. And the child self it's like a defensive mechanism that we created to resolve the emotional conflict between ourselves as little ones and our parent or whoever the caregiver was who was correcting us. And the impact on the present is that these old tapes are often driving what's happening right now. They reinforce our negative self-image. They compromise our self-esteem. They don't allow us to see ourselves for the wonderful, astonishing, perfect souls that we are. And it can be used to as manipulation. It can be used to make the other person feel sorry for you. And that in turn inhibits the sharing of genuine thoughts and feelings. So it can be manipulative. And a sign that it's active is that you feel constricted or you feel judged or made wrong when maybe nobody's doing that. Maybe nobody's even around. Or if somebody's around, they may be saying something and you're taking it. And as I said, your brain processes not only the sensations, but it processes words and puts them through this judgment filter. So somebody may be saying something totally innocent, and then you take it personally. Now, how can you reduce that? Well, in the moment, you can become aware of it without judgment. And this can be very tricky, because one thing that's often suggested are affirmations. You know, okay, I'm wonderful, and I'm terrific, and I will be successful. And for some people that works. My experience and the experience for many people I know is that affirmations are less effective than they seemingly should be. Just being aware of thoughts without judging can be really helpful. If you know somebody who knows tracking or some type of effective listening, it can be helpful to have them, you know, to talk through it with them and have them be reflecting back what is going on. Inner critic work can be very valuable in this, and there are lots of resources about this. And overall, increasing your self-esteem is an important thing, and that's gotten a bad rap lately. And I think what the confusion is that sometimes people confuse self-esteem with ego gratification. So ego gratification is puffing yourself up and making yourself more greater than someone else or others. Genuine self-esteem is seeing everyone as being equally good. So that's the child victim self, and the other unconscious self is the parent or the judge self. And what it looks like is making the other person wrong. So if the victim is making yourself wrong, the judge is making the other person as wrong. You're judging them to be not okay or to be completely wrong. And you're blaming them. You're criticizing them, even if it's only in your head. It's an attempt to control. And if you were to hear the voice in your head, it would be harsh and criticizing. And there, it's easy to see in others. It's easy to hear in others. You can see when somebody's angry and harsh and criticizing, pointing the finger of blame. The origins often are in a very similar place, you know, in those formative years that are so influential. Oftentimes, you see, because in that moment where a parent is, say, punishing a child and you're the child, there are two things going on. One is you're trying to, as the child, trying to cope with the situation. But there's another part of you that's observing that and wanting to be bigger. In other words, instead of in addition to maybe taking on what's being done to you, you're observing what the parent or the caregiver is doing and saying, okay, that's what it means to be big. If I want to be big and not have this happen, I'm going to do that. Being an older brother, I remember that there were many times when I would basically beat up my younger brother because I was bigger and I could do it. And thinking back, I think that there's a certain correlation between times when I was punished and times when I would take it out on him. And if you, you know, the, if you think about just some of the stereotypical patterns, you know, somebody's at work and his boss yells at him. So he comes home or she and yells at their spouse. And then the spouse yells at the kids and the kid kicks the dog and the dog barks at the cat. He was just, and it keeps going on and it perpetuates. And the source of all this is the unconscious parent self, the unconscious judge. The impact on the present is that it reinforces the other person's negative self-esteem. Like when you're acting in the parent, you're criticizing, you're pointing the finger of blame. It can compromise the other person's self-esteem and make the other person reactive in turn. You know, they may respond with their child or they may respond with their parent. Either way, it's not an effective dynamic. It's not the kind of dynamic that leads to wonderful and loving relationships. And it can lead to escalation, conflict, and even violence. You know, it tends to shut the other person down or have the other person come out fighting, either verbally or even physically. So how to recognize when that's being active? Well, you can notice if you're with someone else and they start to react or feeling criticized. Or, and what's maybe more effective is to notice the judgments in your own thoughts and be, you know, separate judgments from facts. And the way to reduce it, you know, over time is to start by always being aware of when that judgment comes up, and yeah, just notice it and label it without judgment. Okay, there's another judgment. Oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. Not, oh boy, am I judgmental. That really sucks. Now, to delve deeper, you can identify what the underlying beliefs are, especially the shoulds. You know, so many judgments all kind of boil back to a should. They should do this. They shouldn't do that. Those are ripe for questioning. Be curious about those. Don't not judgmental about your own thoughts. Be curious. And one wonderful thing that I've gotten from Byron Katie is just the simple question, is it true? Is that judgment true? Is that really true? And increasing your self-esteem, again, not ego gratification or making yourself wrong, but increasing your genuine self-esteem can go a long way toward that. So those are the two unconscious places, the child, the parent. So what's left? Well, what's left is the aware heart. The aware heart is a place of self-esteem, of the essential goodness of who you are and who the other person is. In other words, it's the explicit and conscious acknowledgement that you're perfect and you're complete, you know, despite all the ego and personality layers that are on top, that everyone's okay. And when you're in your aware heart, you are fully present, you're alert, you're awake, and you're aware. And it's only being in that aware heart that you can be an effective listener. Because most communication can be categorized into thoughts, feelings, and judgments. And now this is what you're hearing from the other person. So the way to be an effective listener, to track thoughts, feelings, and judgments, is to begin by being in your own aware heart, being present to the moment. Now, thoughts are, you know, if you hear a thought being expressed, it could be something factual and objective, like, and that can be correct or incorrect. You know, somebody says, the sky is blue, and you look up, it looks blue to me. Or they may say, the sky is green, and you look up, it looks blue to me. So, or here's another fact. On average, men are taller than women. And that's an objective fact on average. Does that mean that this man is taller than that woman? Absolutely not. And if somebody says, the sky is green and I look and I see it's blue, then I can be curious. So, yeah, that's very interesting. It's always looked blue to me. I'd like to understand how you come to the impression that it's blue. Not, you're crazy. On the other hand, opinions or beliefs are subjective, and they inform the speaker's perspective or their preferences, and they're not necessarily correct or incorrect, but like feelings, they just are. I mean, I like sunsets, you know. Someone else may not like sunsets. Wine tastes better to some people than beer. To others, beer tastes better than wine. To some, all alcohol tastes bad. To others, all alcohol tastes good. Is any of that right, wrong? No. It's just where they are, and that's what gives the juiciness to our communication. On the other hand, feelings are a spontaneous reaction in the moment, and they're neither right nor wrong. They simply are. But like an opinion, a feeling, you can't really change. If you're feeling something, you can't make yourself feel something else other than what you're feeling. However, if you become aware, if the other person becomes aware of them, or you become aware of them yourself and just be with them in the present moment, a lot of times they will naturally on their own shift to something else. So when you're tracking feelings, it's important to remember that they're neither right nor wrong. I mean, if you say you shouldn't feel that way, then that just sends the whole thing south, because the fact is they do feel that way. Now, be careful not to try to read somebody's mind. Certainly never tell an angry person, you're angry. I am not angry. And as a meme I saw on the internet recently said, never in the history of human interaction has a person calmed down when told to calm down. So, you just calm down. Never works. If somebody's upset, then telling them to calm down will just make them more upset. So what's the alternative? Tracking. To validate what they're saying. And even if it's not clear, I mean, there are some phrases that can be very helpful. You know, you're so troubled by what happened, or you're confused as to why that was okay, or that happened, or you're not okay with what happened. And as tracking progresses, then both you and the speaker will become more clear about what they're feeling. And my experience has been that, when especially when there are negative feelings being expressed, that by tracking them, they just naturally tend to not only just to sort of dissipate, but that's not the primary objective. The main objective is they help the other person into their aware heart. They help the other person get more present to what's going on for them. It can help them identify what is going on that led to that uncomfortable feeling. So this tracking skill and process is such a valuable one. And I've spoken of that in many segments, and I will speak much more of that in upcoming segments. And just to recap, I've talked about the unconscious being unconscious versus conscious, the two unconscious places, the child, the victim, and the parent, the judge. I've talked about how to reduce each one's effect on the present moment and how there's only one conscious place, the aware heart, as I call it, and how this applies to being an effective listener when tracking. And these are all very valuable things that I have found. And as they say on the internet, your mileage may vary, but I encourage you to not just take any of this at face value, but try it, test it. See if it works for you. And until then, you have been listening to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. I've been your host, Arnie Puff. I so appreciate your joining me today. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every third Thursday at 5:05 right here on Good Vibrations Radio. To learn more about effective listening and more in my workshops on effective communication and relationship building, you can email me at ahbuss, that's A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart, all one word, .com. That's ahbuss at consciousawareheart.com. You can visit my webpage, www.consciousawareheart.com. Like me on Facebook at AwareHeart. Follow me on Twitter at Effect5Comm. That's Effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. And until next time, remember, listen from your heart.
You should have listened. There is someone here inside. Someone I thought had died so long ago.